Was he actually, was that the first occasion which you met him in those sort of circles, or was it before then?
No, I first met him after the war, through the World Peace Movement. But this was an outfit that started in 1949 in Wroclaw. I don't think he ever went to one of its world jamborees.
No,
but
no, he did.
He was quite active.
He didn't go to Paris one.
Didn't go to Wroclaw or to Paris, the Salpeo.
Yes.
I'll say the Stade Buff, the Buffalo Stadium.
Incidentally, I saw that bird, you know, the Picasso dove that was the motif of that, is now being used as a Spanish travel agency poster. We used to see that the other day.
Picasso dove was not the motif for the first formative conference,
no,
but
was
the second one.
Second one.
In Vienna, it emerged.
So what sort of passage did you meet him in?
But the minute this World Peace Council thing started, it attracted the amalgam of all the left in England, from communists through to the Labour Centre. And he gave great support to that, both in there, and actually attended at conferences. And I've heard him speak at one, although I've heard him speak on a number of more intimate meetings, mainly organized to raise support for it. I've heard him speak in a, what can only be called a positively socialist fashion, calling for socialism in England and urging young people to do that, to join in the battle, as it were. But he was always devoted to trying to find some people who would support the kind of things he had in mind. And being a very good liver himself, and having been brought up to an excellent style of living and feeding above all, he would always want to entertain anyone he was wanting to support. And there's no doubt he didn't take up and support a number of young people who seemed to be on the left and seemed to be supporting the things he was interested in, and this World Peace Council was plainly one of them. I wouldn't like to say what other particular movements he took up, because he really focused his attention on the individuals who are engaged in general political life rather than to concentrating on the particular cause. He was willing to support and succor anyone who seemed to be in general supporting the kind of cause that he had much at heart. And his liberalism, his extreme liberalism, which managed to embrace, I don't mean membership of, but close association with the Communist Party, touched every other kind of thing, as indeed in the early days it had reached from Bernard Shaw and, in his most militant socialist days, to the suffragettes, who of course had no element of socialism amongst them in their general principles.
Yes.
They were like a genuine nationalist cause, that's say, embracing the whole of the political scope.
Yes, but you don't really see him then as really a socialist at all.
Oh, entirely as a socialist.
But a sort of libertarian type.
A socialist who devoted his attention to the whole realm of man's activities. He wanted socialism in every aspect of life.
Yes.
And the fact of his looking after himself well, from the point of view of having a first-class cigar, excellent liquor and good meal whenever he could, was only expression of his view that every man ought to live like this, and the world was really, could be rich enough, given any sense, for all the world to live like this.
Clearly
that was his view, and he meant it to apply not only to England and the West End, but to all the world.
And so he combines a crusade for appreciating good living with a crusade for making sure everybody has the means to enjoy good living.
Yes.
Didn't hear. You don't think this was a sort of excusing himself for the fact that he did live very well?
I was rather surprised at that kind of hair shirt remark about giving a similar sum of money the next day to the Communist Party. Yes, he did. But the sort of thing that he did was to put down the deposit for the Albert Hall when there was a meeting.
Yes.
That sort of thing.
Yeah.
And whether he ever got it back or not, I don't suppose he did. Mm. But this was the sort of thing he used to do, was finance things which were beyond the pocket of the organisation that he wanted to sponsor or to help.
He was very much on the rich man behind a lot of left movements.
Was he, I mean, was he a sort of patron then, a sort of...
Yeah, he was a universal patron.
Yes.
For all good causes.
Yes.
You could always go to him. I don't think I ever did, but I know of many who did, who would go to him for any good cause, and he'd put up some money. The last occasion when I got him to do something was when Cuba had just become an independent republic, as it were, free from the CIA. And I was most anxious that its representatives should meet the Eastern European representatives, whom they had never met. It was perhaps 2 years after Castro had come to power, and he had no contact with, perhaps a year, but I think 2 years. He had no contact with the Soviet Union or any other such place. And I asked Henry if we could use his place for the representative of Cuba, who I think was then... This is quite unresearched, and I may have the dates quite wrong. Wasn't yet the young woman of 21 who was the youngest diplomat in London. It must have been just before her, but it was a genuine representative of Castro and not just an official professional left over from the earlier days. And Henry provided his flat and provided, I think, a feast. Well, we had our three ambassadors from Poland and Czechoslovakia and Moscow all came to meet this Cuban chap. Yeah, it was a fantastic talk about the help that the Russians would give and the Poles would give and so on. And it was the beginning, it was a typical kind of gesture of Henry to provide a forum for such a meeting. Mm. Indeed, Henry, having been present at a good part of it, then withdrew.
Did he? And this isn't what I was going to ask you. I mean, He doesn't do any more then than give money, really.
Well, it's on a few occasions only. I've heard him make speeches that were, in the circumstances, of flamboyantly positive socialist character.
What do you think of him as an active politician?
Yes, that's very
important. I would never think of him as an active politician himself.
I certainly never did.
Why not, actually? Yeah, what makes you think not?
He was so acquiesced, he was the understanding rich man behind, ready to help on all occasions.
Well, it's not financially and moral financial support, as it were, I think, much more than...
Oh, yes, certainly. Yes. Great moral support, in the sense that he believed deeply in all the causes he did support, and was willing to discuss these causes, but...
Yes.
And very anxious to help and get people together, as you say, very anxious to introduce people to each other and to get them together and to help people who were doing active politicians and active...
I remember by then he's very old.
Of course, yes.
Mm.
And
as I say, we met him
in the suffragette days.
In his life, really.
He could have been very much more vigorous.
Yes, and he did have ambitions initially, because he contested the Parliament.
Yes, I believe he did. You're quite
right.
As a Labour chap.
Well, no, initially he was conservative, and then he became a Liberal, and then Labour. He went right the whole
hemisphere. He moved to the left all the time.
Yes. But, I mean, when you say he's not a politician, obviously, is that simply saying that he didn't want to be, or that he could never have been? I mean...
No, I was only saying that at the time
he must have been 80.
Yes, and there's no question.
Yeah, I think it was too late
then.
He
had an 80th birthday party. Were you at that party?
Yes, I think I remember.
You probably were, because you were, certainly.
Yeah.
And that was a very mixed gathering.
I was sitting back and watching by that time.
He would have been urging on.
Yes.
I was very interested in his description of his early wealth. I think he went to Eton and not to Christchurch.
Yes, I can't remember. No, Magdalen.
To Magdalen, yes, that's even more appropriate.
Mm.
Magdalen, Oxford, that is.
Mm.
And he obviously was brought up with his with enormous money to spend, and he was accustomed to spending it on himself. He knew how to live well. He knew all the best restaurants in London, and had a splendid supply of liquor always available. And undoubtedly this came direct through father, from grandfather, and holdings in Prudential. And he described to me the way in which he'd taken on from Bernard Shaw the editing of some publication, and I'm sure any historian would know it.
Would know it at once.
And I think it was a periodical, a weekly or maybe monthly.
Yes.
And no doubt associated with the early days of the Fabian business. And when Fabian was far more progressive than it is today. Mm. Oh, indeed, than it was in my time. Mm. It was really dim and backward. If one thinks of poor John Parker, who ran it for, what, 30 years or more. And never made a speech in Parliament as representing Fabian views in all his time, and hasn't yet. Mm. I think he's still there. Mm. And as far as one knows, has never had a full engagement with great factory in his own constituency. So right now is he. He's Ford's a Dagenham.
Really?
He represents Ford's a Dagenham. And they have never managed to persuade him to make a speech in Parliament. Of course, he's not now fit. It's gone much improved since his day. But I mean, this is the measure of its,
yes,
of its right-wing stand.
But in his day, it was very much to the left.
And he was about to have some preferment in the Prudential, I believe, was to become a director, or was to be assume some much more important position as a director, more important than that he already held. And he was offered the choice of giving up this editorship for sure, or giving up the directorship, and he gave up his directorship. Which, if he adhered to it, over the years that he lived and the extraordinary backing he had in the family and in the firm, would have made him one of the richest chaps in the land. Because you have only to have some foundation and to be in such a position when every means of making money known to the world will come through your intray, as it were.
Yes.
So having done that, he had to fall back into his existing reserves of money instead of making new money, but he still had ample money to pour out wealth for all the causes he did back. And although I have not heard of his giving money to the suffragette movement, because I'd have no basis for knowing of it, I'm quite sure that from the way he behaved later on, he must pour money into the party.
Yes, I'm sure he did. And more than that, I mean, I think he gave legal advice, you know, because he was a trained lawyer, wasn't
yes.
he? I think he did advise them in the sort of inner circles.
Yes, but he was in chambers somewhere, though I forget
yes,
where.
Yes, I think so.
I think in Chancery, and certainly
yes, I'm not sure.
Before the First World War.
Yes.
But he had all financial problems towards the end, didn't he? Because he, I think, got rid of it all under the 7-year
That's
law,
right.
And then he lived so much longer than that, quite
well,
considerably.
No, he bought an annuity.
Oh, did he? Because I thought he was a bit short latterly.
Well, that means you get a bit short because the prices go up, then your annuity remains the same.
Yeah.
But I dare say his annuity was very expensive to the insurance company, probably Prudential.
Yes, yes.
Because he went on living a long time and they make their money according to your diet.
Yes, quite.
But did you ever sort of feel yourselves, when you knew him, that there was any contradiction in his life, I mean, all that he felt there was, that is, the elegant library, the good food and so on the one hand, and the association with people very, very often who didn't have any of these things. And did you feel there was a certain incongruity, or do you think he felt there was a certain incongruity about it?
I don't think he did for a minute.
No, I don't think he did. I think he was a humanitarian, if you like, and he didn't regard inequality of economic status as making people different.
No.
And he was just pleased that he could provide something for people that they didn't have. But I think this is quite a thing in professional classes. Because of holding left-wing views, one doesn't feel that one has to cast away everything that one has and go about in rags and riches. You give what you can, as it were, and what you've got that's of use. And I think he felt rather that sort of way. That he'd got money and he made it work in causes that he espoused, as it were.
So did he ever, even in those days, a bit embarrassed by his wealth or whatever? He was rather proud of his possessions, wasn't he?
Oh, yes. Certainly not ashamed of it.
Didn't excuse himself for being rich.
But if there'd been any demand or requirement, because we'd turned into a socialist country, that he should give it up, I should have thought he wouldn't have had a moment's hesitation.
Yes, yes.
On the other hand, one seen his type, for example, in Moscow, ad lib every, but usually people are making some great contribution at the time, but I mean every artist, every musician and so on, of any note, of any success, lived in the kind of style and no better than he lived in.
Mm.
Well, perhaps not quite so well as he lived, but his demands on living space were not enormous.
Yes, yes.
After he left this place that I never saw, this Newlands place you speak of, his flats in London, first in
Hyde Park Street somewhere. No, that's not the first, that's where he was.
Well, he was in Park Street for a time, and then Hyde Park Street, all in the sort of Mayfair, Bayswater.
Just north of Bayswater Road. But the place I first knew him was in, where John Lewis is.
Oh, yes.
The square north of John Lewis.
You mean
Cavendish Square?
Cavendish Square.
Yeah.
On the west shore of Cavendish Square, he had a very distinguished flat. And this was, I think, probably during the war, but certainly after the war.
And what were the flats that you went to like? I mean, were they well appointed?
Beautifully furnished, very comfortable. And very beautifully done, and obviously done very professionally. No nonsense about do it yourself.
He had these bookshelves, as I said, he sold the Caxton to put up the bookshelves.
Is that audible?
I don't know. Anyhow, he did do that.
Does your machine record such an observation as that?
Oh, I think so. Shall we have a look and see?
Baby
then fit in all this? I mean, what sort of role did she play in this life? She was just a housekeeper, really.
Well, we all used to ask each other about it. You know, she behaved as though she was his daughter, but she was quite obviously not. And she did all the cooking and the housekeeping and acted as hostess for him.
Yes. And would she actually join in political discussions?
No. In my recollection, she was absolutely silent. She'd receive guests. She'd dressed quite elegantly.
I think she made, I would agree that what Janet said earlier, that she was a bit of a silly woman, and that what political comments she did make were obviously quotations from Daddy or something she'd read, but she was a marvellous leader-in for him. This was the role I always thought that she completely excelled at. She used to say, don't you remember the time when? And he was off, you know, and she kept the whole pot boiling, as it were, like that. And
she
was very good at that.
She was sort of foil, in a way. So what did she then get out of it, really? A sort of reflective story from him?
A good life, and I think she enjoyed it. I think she was fond of him.
Yes.
And I think she got she did get a very good life, didn't she? A very rich, good life.
Lot of travel. Have you read
his book?
Yes, I have, yes.
Ghastly, isn't it?
Yes, pretty awful.
Travel in the Middle East and so on.
She wasn't at the level of mental discourse with him then, was she? I mean, she didn't talk to him about politics.
I thought, in no way, no idea. Discussing them. But the recollections of his actual activities, not of his thought, but his activities was valuable to him. And that she was able to use by way of acting as a flux in the course of conversation. It was a bit limited, though, even that part.
Was she a positive embarrassment in conversation? Really? Would she say things I don't want to put words in
your
mouth.
No, she was too quiet.
Yeah, she was
quiet,
discreet.
She is.
Not really quiet. I think she was too cautious.
Yes,
I see. Yes, being very careful.
Yeah.
She seemed to me to be not like the hard character in the book, with a sweetie covering, as it were.
Mm-hmm.
I really thought she was a sweet character.
Yeah.
She was very kind to Anne, for example, and she used to send her little presents.
She was very sweet to the children. She sent presents to the boys, too.
Yeah.
And I felt she would sort of be busy being, perhaps when the conversation was of that age, she would be busy being hostess.
Mm. Mm. But she handed it again from
looking
that,
after people's drinks and coffee and things like that.
She
had a perfectly positive role, but it wasn't an intellectual one.
No.
But you did actually talk about her, did you?
Oh, yes. Okay, so.
Everyone delighted in her.
Everyone thought it was
I mean, trying to guess her relationship to him, or...
No, there was no question of guessing her relationship at all.
Mm.
There she was. She'd undoubtedly joined in his life very fully. From some nursing days. I assumed it was nursing of him over something, but you think
during
it was
the First World War.
It was she was nursing in places where he supported
her. Yes, I think that's it.
I really don't know.
But it's long before we met.
Nobody quite knows. Even the family don't know that. I mean, they don't know when he first met her, but it was about 1915, I think. Mm.
She'd come out of a convent, according
well,
to
apparently,
an Irish convent.
But there were apparently energetic attempts to discover blue blood in Ireland later.
Oh, really?
I think those attempts would have failed.
What about looks? I mean, what did she look like, maybe?
Oh dear, I don't remember.
She was small and she had reddish, undyed hair, I think. And
she moved in a mouse-like manner.
Yes.
The small and steps, rather slightly hunched.
Small-boned person.
Yes. What small-boned?
I really think rather sweet.
And nicely dressed.
Yes.
Always nicely dressed, yes.
Yes.
I've no doubt Henry took her to his tailor.
Yes.
No, she always had nice clothes, obviously done by some good women's costumier.
I think she learned all that in Paris.
Beautiful Parisian bags and things like that.
That's right, so she did.
They lived in Paris for quite a long time, between the walls.
That's right, they did,
yes. And there was a great tale from her that she'd been engaged to be married at that time, and how she'd kept her wedding dress in a box and they'd had to flee. Was it at the beginning of the Second World War or something?
That's right, yes.
And she'd left it behind and it was never seen again and all sorts of things.
Yes. What about her voice? I mean, did she have a pleasant voice? I mean, a quiet voice, I suppose.
Yeah, it was a quiet voice. It was neither a Southern English nor a Yorkshire nor an Irish. It was a very gentle, soft, and undistinguished voice.
Yeah, I don't remember. I don't think I remember her voice at all.
Whereas he is very well tailored, is he? And tall.
Striking. Not at all.
But elegant at all times,
yes.
And always with the latest kind of suit that a chap of his age would wear.
Thin, wasn't he?
Yes, the Eton tie.
What?
The Eton tie, I've seen.
Yes, he wore it. He wore it, Eton tie, quite often. And always had a very smart suit. At home, wore a whitish, in the summer, wore a whitish sort of suit, which was very much ahead of the time. In front of the times, almost something left over from Egypt. but you know, very pale, off-white suit, which wasn't very usual. Now I gather it's very usual for city chaps to wear such garments. You wear them in the evening too, but he was always the smartest dressed chap imaginable for his age.
He was quite conscious about health, wasn't he? I mean, he used to deliberately not take lunch, so that he could afford the self-indulgence of the evening, you know, really first-rate meal.
Well, he certainly remained very slim and elegant in his figure and model to...
Hold on a little.
Just a waistcoat, just a half.
And it's really fascinating. I mean, it's marvellous to have all three of you who knew him and talking about him, because I've never had a group like talking about him before, because you remind each other of things.
I'm not sure if we've told you anything.
Yes, you have. When you say you met him in smaller groups, was that as a regular thing, or was it only for a purpose that you'd meet him there?
I remember at dinner parties at his house.
Yes.
Often dinner parties at his house.
But usually because someone had asked
some
him
reason.
To arrange
yes.
that someone should meet someone.
Somebody was meeting somebody mm-hmm. there.
And he used to take us to restaurants, Petit Savoyard,
that's
a great one that we went to. Superb food.
Villiers, he loved too.
Yes.
Top
yes.
of Regent Street, just below Oxford Circus, on the left as you're going north.
He tapped me off for addressing the waiter on one occasion.
For addressing him?
I asked the waiter for something, I can't remember what it was. And he said, I address the waiter, my dear.
I address.
It seemed like a library that he used.
Yes, I'm sure it read everything.
Yes,
I thought
of it.
Well,
he had used it. Yes.
Yeah.
He gave me a present, and that was a disc with a roll top made by William Morris for William Morris's own use. It's really the most remarkable bit of craftsmanship. It has perhaps 30 drawers, and a lot of minute, no, that's overstating it, perhaps 20 drawers. A lot of minute little drawers along the great facade, like a Welsh dresser, but with 1,000 drawers.
What wood is it made of?
Oh, it's made of mahogany.
I should think mahogany, yes.
And when you shut one of the small drawers, two or three others pop out.
They're so well fitted.
So well fitted, they're perfectly
made. It's so nice.
Yeah.
And a drawer will draw, the bigger drawers will draw out 3 feet. Because the depth of the they're still absolutely rigid, they don't fall out.
Yes.
And the little trays that draw out to rest your things on them.
Yes.
And as they come out, they're absolutely horizontal, remain horizontal to their full out position. So they're precise. There's a balance in the.
But Jean, you said, I think, when I was talking to you before, that the contrast between him and quite a lot of the people. Who he associated with was quite striking. I mean, he'd appear with his best clothes on, sort of country suit or whatever it was, and she'd be very well dressed. But there'd be a lot of people around them who were quite different.
Yes, I think the first time I remember seeing him was at a meeting of a thing called the British Soviet Friendship Society, and that was a society which had been set up with the original intention of providing kind of club premises, I think, in London. They bought a house, I don't know if it was in Portland Place or somewhere like that, and they gradually had to sell them all off. But I think he must have been instrumental in providing some of the money for this. And this was the annual general meeting of this thing.
Friendship houses,
that's right, yes. And it still exists.
Yes.
But in a very small way, I don't think there's a house anymore. But
yes, they own a house in Brixton now.
Do they?
Come down.
It was.
There is not that the SCR has one.
Yes, certainly.
The SCR has a house in Brixton, doesn't the BSFS as well?
Oh,
the
SCR, right.
The SCR has a house in Brixton.
Yeah.
They had to sell their houses too, didn't they?
Well, this other one has a house now in Parkway.
Yes, somewhere up here,
isn't it? Old Street.
Yes. That's right, all three. Yeah, this was just an annual general meeting, and there were a lot of people who were interested in various aspects of British Soviet friendship, and of all kinds of people. And I was very struck with the fact that this obviously very posh looking couple arrived. I mean, she had white kid gloves and this sort of thing, Saturday afternoon, I suppose it was. And couldn't place them, obviously, to start with, but then discovered who they were. But I mean, they were absolutely accepted by everybody who was there and were very friendly and chatty with all the people who obviously had known them before. They didn't seem to be making any difference, any sort of social distinction of any kind.
So he's really right at the centre of a whole set of organisations, is he? That are really, I suppose, associated with the left of the Labour Party and further left.
Yes, he wasn't at the centre of them, but he had access to the centre of them.
Yes.
He wasn't active enough to be busy in the centre.
Yes, yes.
But he certainly couldn't be spoken of as moving in circles, because he was always at the hub of any circle he was concerned with.
Yes, yes. You mean people would meet at his house?
Yeah, or would invite him to do something for them, or usually to contribute something.
Mm.
Oh, my second election, general election, 1950, he summed up, I think, a couple of £100, which was a great sum of those days, towards my election expenses, showing what an ass he was. How ill-judged were his actions.
But what happened
but
in
very
that?
Kindly, John. I mean, this is
very
the sort
kind,
of
yeah.
thing he did,
ah.
was to...
Yes,
you know,
yes
he did.
I mean, he was very kind.
He hoped I'd get in.
Yes.
What happened in 1956, if anything, then, to him? Did that affect his...
Oh, I don't think so, really. What, over Hungary?
Hungary, yes.
Oh, no, I think he
when
was...
When did he die?
I think about 67 or 8.
It's been known. I don't think that
died.
The Hungarian situation had any effect on him at all,
no,
as far as I remember.
I thought I remembered speaking to him about Vincenti, who was obviously going to be a cardinal figure if the whatever it was in Hungary had
yeah.
had success. And his denunciation of Vincenti was as strong, well, if possible, as my own.
Mm-hmm.
And so he couldn't have had anything but satisfaction that those who are going to put this chap in control of the new free Hungary could not be very desirable people.
So he's not, he doesn't in any sense move out?
No, he's, I would have thought he was a sort of old style Stalinist, and probably would have still been if he'd been alive.
Mm.
Yes, yes.
Don't mean a supporter of Stalin after what was known of him, but an approver of what was done that wasn't, if you admit the things that weren't so well known.
Yes, yes, yes.
That is to say, a supporter of Stalin is the leader who'd won the war for the world, and
yes.
saved Britain and America from...
So,
what's
his attitude to the Labour Party? Presumably one of sort of rather, well, very strong criticism from the left.
The very phrase I was going to use, yes, that he criticised Attlee throughout his time as wasting the opportunity that was given him, criticised Bevin most strongly as betraying all that socialists stood for and being so much in the pay of the Americans that it was indecent for him to go on at all.
Yes.
Bevin, that is.
Hmm?
Bevin.
Bevin, Ernest
yes,
Bevin.
Ernest
yeah.
Bevin.
Did he never talked, I suppose, about his suffragette day at all?
Never, no.
Because he did have a... I think he had a warrant to go to Bow Street or whatever it was, or summons or whatever it was, which he had framed, I think, in his dining room. Which he was alleged to have been very proud of and pointed to, presumably not to any of you.
Not this, no.
I seem to remember him talking about going to see Pethick Lawrence, though, when Pethick Lawrence was shut up, visiting him.
Yes, quite
probably.
Yes,
but
quite
probably. No more than just...
See, I think Pethick Lawrence was... I think I have a vague recollection. See, Mrs. Hall was quite good on this. I think she said Pethick Lawrence was on his Christmas card list. Because she used to make out these lists of
mm.
And I think you know, they had that amount of connection was preserved.
He must have moved much more to the left, or to a position of a more militant left, after the First World War.
Yes, oh, he did.
Because, for example, he was never, as far as I know, concerned with the anti-war movement during the First World War.
No, he wasn't, no. And in fact, rather the reverse, he wanted to fight.
Yeah.
And was annoyed when he couldn't.
Mm. Yeah, I think of Harry Thompson and
yes.
as being typical of that group.
Yes.
And there was no contact between them.
Yes.
Didn't he work in the consular service? I seem to remember him telling me about stamping passports in France in the first
yes,
war.
I have a vague feeling he did, but I don't know.
And how he had instructions to stamp them in a special way to indicate different things.
Yes.
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 Rather revealing, I thought.
Yes. But that really is very helpful. So, in a way, he's a central figure, but peripheral at the same time. It's a peculiar sort of position he But of course, it's partly a matter of age, simply, isn't it? He just is so old, and he obviously occupies a strange position from that point of view.
Yes, obviously far busier and more active as were in their days.
I think that the Halls tell me, and I may be wrong about this, that he was very generous to communist leader's son who went to Cambridge.
And then subsequently went to Cuba.
And generous to a number of individuals. I mean, the old fashioned sort of feudal way. Hangers on as well, you know.
Patron of
yes.
young chaps who are.
Yes.
Is he in Cuba still?
I don't know.
What? It's his pair's daughter who's in Australia, isn't it? Isn't it Australia?
Yes, she was there.
Yes.
Marjorie was
Do tell me what you know about St. Lawrence before I switch it off. And some other opportunities to ask you about that too. I mean, you obviously saw him from a quite different perspective than anybody else.
Over India, you mean?
Yes.
Yeah, but I saw terribly little because when we were elected in 45, Cripps Dashley had already decided that India, we couldn't hold India any longer.
Yes.
And therefore, and Lawrence agreed with that. Really, I took part in three deputations to him, organised by the Indian League, and no more. And those were over quite minor matters, no great principle involved.
He was, of course, by that time in the House of Lords, so you didn't see him in operation.
Yeah, he was in the Lords, and he was, what was the word?
Secretary of State for India.
Secretary of State for India, yeah.
Yes, yes. But on these deputations, I mean, how did he handle them? Deputations. Have you remember anything distinctive about it?
Or? Not really. No, he was almost as quiet as a baby herself. He really was most. By then, had become a most
quiet grey man.
A most insignificant figure.
Yeah. Very insignificant. Mm. But he and his wife were sort of creeped down from the flat above, when he were at Williams.
Yes.
It was all the same staircase.
Yeah. And that was in the early 30s, beginning
was
of
the
30s.
34.
Yeah.
You knew as early as that.
Mm.
Did you really?
Well, he lived upstairs in Old Square.
Old Square Lincoln's Inn.
Yes.
About number 5, I suppose. And one then only saw him moving about. And so he was much older after the war.
Yes.
But had he not been on the Simon Commission in some way?
Yes, I think he had.
In 31, with Cripps Dashley. Yes, mm. And so not only had a great knowledge of Trafalgar, he could have knowledge of India.
Yes.
But shared their determination that India had to be independent.
But he was also financial secretary of the Treasury in the 1929-31 government.
Yeah.
And a lot of people thought he ought to have been Chancellor, but Snowden was there first, sort of thing.
Snowden was far more in the party, as it were.
Yes, well, yes, yes. But he seems to have been a sort of rather punch-like figure to look at, and rather small and rather.
Yes, he was very grey.
Yes.
And he has a biggish head for his body.
Yes.
And seemed always to be curled up. But
yes. Yes. But, of course, he is very much at the end of his prime by the time you came across him.
Yeah.
But I imagine his connection with Harbin would be very limited by that time, because, as you say, that the opposite ends of the party.
Yes.
Really,
yes, because he'd gone to the right.
Mm.
The liberation of India wasn't a leftist act at all. It was
no.
Just sheer despair that we couldn't produce armed forces enough to
to
control even the RIN, the Navy revolt, let alone anything else that might
happen. Yes.
The naval mutiny.
So Jean, you'd say that Children then is entirely wrong, really, in its assessment. Is it good at all in its description of the personalities involved, or is it not even good at that?
I don't think Chaudhry himself is a good description of Harbin at all. I didn't get any feeling of Harbin out of that figure, the way he described his relationship with the chap who was telling the story at the beginning, for example. And then you didn't get the impression that he was a bon vivant, really, of any kind, which is one of Harbin's main characteristics.
Mind you, I suppose you've got to be careful, haven't you? I mean, if you're doing a thing like that, you can't be. You've got to distort the truth in some way, haven't you? Otherwise, you presumably become liable for libel actions.
Well, I suppose so. But I mean, he could have made it. I would have recognised the baby figure in the story, but I wouldn't have recognised the Harbin figure.
Then recognised her as distorted.
Yes, she's very distorted. I don't think she had that bitchy quality that comes out in that story. I don't think that she was self-seeking particularly, as that indicates. In that story of the stigmata and so on, I don't think she'd have gone to those sort of lengths to produce just an effect like that.
But now, you may not have noticed this, but somebody told me that she had a sort of a big crucifix in one of either his bedroom or her bedroom in their last flat.
Mm.
And she regarded Harbin as a sort of Christ figure. And in a sense, sort of worshipped him.
Well, no, not my impression. I think she was religious. She had a Catholic upbringing, I think. And I don't think that she had thrown that off. Perhaps she wasn't so much religious as kind of superstitious.
Yes. She didn't go to church.
She didn't go to church, yeah. But I think she did have this background. But I don't know.
I certainly have a recollection of seeing her bedroom and seeing something like a black velvet cloth.
You know she didn't go to church, yes. I just wondered. I always thought she was religious, wasn't she?
But not in going to Mass at all.
I think she had quite strong connections with the local presbytery, I don't know what the word would be, but group of friars or something,
yes,
in Mayfair somewhere.
Mm. There is a convent just down from
yes,
Hyde Park Street, isn't
yes.
there? Perhaps
I think it was that.
That's what I was thinking of, but I had a feeling that she had some connection with the church.
Yes. But, I mean, in a way, I mean, you may well be right, Gina, I just don't know any way you knew her and I didn't, but isn't it the case that by the time you knew her, she got what she wanted, and that at the time that Aldous Huxley was writing, she was still fighting for position. Do you see what I mean?
Well, I wonder. My impression wasn't ever that she fought for the position. I always got the impression that he had acquired her, as it were, and not she him. I don't know what you think, but that I thought that he had found her in this hospital or whatever during the war, and from then on he had decided that she would be.
But how is it, I mean, in these permissive days sort of thing, to use a cliche, nobody would ask questions about that sort of thing. I mean, no one would ask what relationship he had to be with. How did they get away with it at that time? I mean,
she behaved as though she was his daughter. She always sort of, didn't she?
Yes, well, we used to discuss quite often whether, in fact,
what
she was
his
mistress or whether she ever had been, and I think that the conclusion we came to was that possibly she hadn't. I really wouldn't be able to say one way or another.
It's one of the things that most people talked about, queried.
Yes.
What was the relationship?
But nobody.
It was that sort of relationship.
But nobody was able to say absolutely and positively, oh yes, but of course it must have been that sort of relationship.
But Harbin never tried to explain what the relationship was. I mean, he just sort of moved it in and out.
Why should he?
No, not. No. Yes. So you just sort of go there and you see these two together and you don't ask questions and you go away again, sort of thing. I suppose this is how most of us live anyway, isn't it?
Yes, how did you pick up this chap? When did you first see him?
Oh, yes.
What made you think anything about him at all?
See, we've got wedding rings on, you see. Yeah. I mean, I don't know even whether Harlan would have had a wedding ring or whether she would. I think she put one on after they got married, I think.
She didn't wear a wedding
ring. When did they get married?
I think about 3 years before he died. That
oh,
is
really?
About 1965 or so.
In Paris. Or in France it was.
Did you realize he died as late as then?
He must have been alive still in 67 because the chap who wrote about Pankhurst, David Mitchell, was given quite a lot of manuscripts about the suffragette movement by Harbin then.
It must be when we came back to London. I thought we were in London. We
heard about it now. Yes. But, and as far as you're concerned, I mean, he had no family at all then.
Well, we never met any of his family.
No, we never met him, but we knew of them.
I see.
I feel we may have met a grandson now, once.
Yes, you probably did.
Yes, I think he was at that Ben's birthday party.
I think so.
Mm.
Yes.
think he ever introduced Bailey, because obviously you can't ask why someone's there, but sometimes when you're in introduction, because you're a two.
He just called her Miss Mulock.
That's right. And
then referred to her as Bailey.
He always introduced her as Miss Mulock, that's right.
Did he? Mm-hmm. Yes. Well, it's all very intriguing. I'll switch it off. So you play tennis with her and football with the boys in the morning. And then you had lunch.
Then we had lunch. And I'm sure that I sat next to a moderately young woman who was a Littleton.
Oh, yes.
And she at once really a sort of stagey kind of player and announced that she was a Littleton, a Littleton. And her dad had populated the colony. Indeed, the Littleton settlements were a famous figure in the 1840s. Mm. There were about 10 shiploads of people that arrived with a positive intention of setting up a rival to Botany Bay, with some entirely respectable cross-sections of English society. So that ship after ship contained several villages, let's say squire and parson and sometimes even a lawyer, but carpenter, baker, candlestick maker, shepherd, and so on, each with their gear, sometimes with a sheep and a pig or two. And
the lady of the man with a parasol.
Yeah, lady of the man with a parasol and a parakeet in a cage. And it really was aimed at setting up an English village in New Zealand countryside. Of course, in no time, they all stripped to the waist and fighting the Indians, really.
Well, the ones who did much better were from the village carpenter and the people who could do something.
Yes,
well, build the houses.
Yes, yeah,
in no time, they all had axes and spades.
Yes.
And they were busy battling with the wood, the bush and the splendid climate and the Maoris who came to drive them out.
But Lady Esther herself was a terrific performer, wasn't she?
Terrific performer. But I went on with these performances with her because I must have eventually, next time was come for the weekend, and there was football with the boys and tennis with Nancy most of the day. And not only that, the young man on a motorbike came and took her out for a run, young Lawrence, the other young Lawrence, and the midshipman Lawrence, the airman Lawrence.
Yes.
And it was long before the Clifton days, of course. That says 10 years before that.
Yes, yes.
Then, oh yes, when she said, you must be a very great athlete, be a Rhodes Scholar, I said, well, a mile walk was my accomplishment. In fact, I got half through from mile walk in my youth.
She had some rather almost aggressive bantering manner, didn't she?
Oh, yes, and she said, mile walk, that's only after tea. Save it up for tea, meanwhile, it's tennis and football.
Yes.
I've never played this sort of football, I've never seen it played.
Yes.
But I know some other game of football.
I must read more about Lady Astor. I've only read one or two biographies of her. I think she's a rather crucial figure at the moment.
Oh, yes, she's obviously quite.
They're not very powerful politically, really, but she's such an offbeat member of the Tory party.
Yeah.
She never really.
She never right in. And in particular, what was noticeable, she was never in with that creature who dominated the Tory party for years, Augusta Inskip.
Oh.
This was a daughter of a chap named Glasgow.
Yes.
And she appointed 2.5 Prime Minister. She certainly appointed Baldwin, and she appointed Neville.
Yeah.
And she really dominated England.
Mm.
She was married to Tom Inskip, who was the dimmest chap who ever became either attorney or Chief Justice or Lord Chancellor, all of which she became.
Mm.
He was quite unfit, really, one of them.
Mm.
It's only through. This woman was powerful enough to appoint these other two. And so, If she can do that for them, what couldn't she do for her?
But she didn't get on with Nancy Astley.
Never got on with Nancy, or Nancy with her, and so Nancy really never had a chance of being even a cabinet minister.
Mind you, Nancy cooked her own dinner, and she was such a... Can I put this on here?
Yes, a bit more brown.
No, that's fine, thank you.